Welcome to the Nightbird Radio Podcast. I'm Timothy Saylor, and I'm going to be your host this evening as we sound out the subconscious, navigate the nocturnal, and explore the farthest reaches of our experience. Coming at you from the back of an 86 Dodge Ram van on the rolling foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains in the great forest, deep in the heart of the Kali Yuga. This is Radio for the Hauntological Turn. Nightbirds, I'm excited to announce the inaugural flight of the Nightbird Radio Patreon. I've been searching for ways to bring y'all into the flock, to get y'all more involved, to offer more opportunities for you to support, and to continue to grow in what I can contribute to you, my listeners. And I've landed on Patreon. So for just $3.33 a month, you'll get access to monthly Q&As, bonus panel discussions on member-selected topics, and membership in our private Discord server, where you can perch on the wires and sing with other Nightbirds, guests of the show, and yours truly. Visit patreon.com/nightbirdradio to join. That's patreon.com/nightbirdradio. Patrons will be mentioned on the show and listed in the show notes. I'm excited to invite you to join me on this new journey for the podcast, and I look forward to flying with you. Now, let's get to the conversation. And welcome back, Nightbirds. It's great to have you back, and it's great to be back. This week, I'm joined by David Payne and Lindsay Stark, and we have a special episode for you. We're going to do a topic, and we're going to talk all about the runes. How are y'all doing today?
Yeah, doing good, man. Good as always.
Doing always, always happy to be back with my some of my favorite weirdos.
Hell yeah, happy to have you. So this episode came about. Okay, so I'll say like, I think I messaged both of you and was like, we have to fucking do a show about the runes. And I was like having this, I think, as you know, y'all will relate when you work with someone like Odin. It's kind of a class of beings that I think work this way, but I know this is my experience. It's just with Odin. You will have like an epiphany all of a sudden, and it just comes. And it's like, it doesn't even necessarily need to come from, sometimes it might come from a book or it might come from a piece of media, but sometimes it just wells up from within. It's that gnosis that just springs up that comes from almost nowhere. You weren't expecting it. And all of a sudden, like, I was, like, driving down the street crying and laughing at the same time and, like, punching my steering wheel. You know what I mean? And I just understood something about the runes. And, like, it's almost like it wasn't, like, a piece of discrete knowledge. It was just an understanding of their importance. Like, oh, shit. Okay, like, if you really understood how important these were, it would be all you did. Does that strike y'all?
Yeah, I mean, it does for me because, like, my, you know, if you, like, boil it all down, like, as condensed as you can, to me, the runes is basically, like, the source code of reality.
Yeah.
Like, even outside of, like, our existence. And, like, I come from kind of, like, a Gnostic background of, you know, how I view things anyways, too. And, like, it still fits within that, too. It's just that it's, if it's the source code, the DNA of reality, like, it is everything. So like, it doesn't kind of matter what type of magic I'm doing. Even when I do PGM shit, like, I'm still using runes or throwing runes or making binary runes on shit. Like, it's just been a part of everything that I do.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's one of the things that that's really nice about working with the runes in that aspect is so many of them are concrete things that then are actually encompassing lots of non-concrete concepts. So you have one that is a kind of tree, but then it is also all these other things that fall into tree, and it kind of helps you to see again how reality is like funneling a lot of things down into these smaller and bigger concepts. Everything is infinitely large if you just like look at it the right way, which is sort of again that sort of immediate gnosis that you get of something. It's like this is so tiny and it's everything.
Yeah, exactly. It's that whole Gnostic idea of there's this big unknowable thing, and it funnels down to define itself more, and then it funnels down to define itself more, and that happens over and over and over and over again until eventually we just get this little scratch symbol. But it's not the scratch symbol. It's this almost like living entity behind every single one of the runes.
Yeah, that emanatory nature of reality. I like that too because it makes me think of, and I talk about this a lot, but like the amount of information that can be encoded in a symbol is like exponentially more than can be encoded in like, like a word or an idea. Like, and I think, some, maybe some languages are better than others at this, but like, when you have, like, so for instance, in our alphabet, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, they just describe sounds. But the runes describe sounds. They describe ideas. They're actually like sort of pictures of things. And so, like, that pictograph kind of side that you get to it, and this is not like a superiority thing. It's just like it gives it another angle to look at where it's like they're baked into the myth, and therefore, like, you can encode numbers in them. There's just so much information that can be conveyed with a symbol, and like almost different dimensions of information.
Right.
It's like a
Yeah,
hieroglyphic. Go ahead.
contrasting them against something like tarot, where so many of the tarot cards are like these abstract concepts. You're thinking about sadness or anger or anguish, and that is a different experience for all of us on this plane of existence, what sadness feels like versus something like if you're looking at this is just ice. This is need. This is something that is much more primal and concrete and then expands out from that. I think is there is an interesting thing where because the symbol is so fixed, it actually means more than if it were something that were more abstract. And there's again, I think also having fewer, it's like you have more meaning wrapped up in a single rune than you get in, again, like not to be like runes are superior to tarot. It's a different tool, but there's a reason why one of them like resonates with me and speaks to my soul, and one is constantly sort of a feeling of like, I guess this is this thing. That's my own experience, which is not going to be the same for everyone, but yeah.
It's actually the exact same for me. That's why I don't use tarot. Like, I feel like every time I try to use tarot, all I get back is it repeating the same question. Like, oh, what's going on with XYZ? And you do a spread and it's like, oh, this is what's going on with XYZ, but it doesn't answer. It just repeats the question back. Where with runes, it's a little more cutthroat. They're just like, this is how shit is. What are you gonna do about it? Like, there's no like guessing. There's no real like, oh, I don't know what this could possibly mean. Like, it's usually pretty cut and dry and very direct for me, at least.
Yeah,
I would
and I
agree.
think they there's something like, okay, I don't really, maybe I know why. But the experience I have when reading runes is that, like, it gives me, like, a sentence. Whereas a tarot spread gives me, like, there's, like, this whole scene, and I'm like, what? Who's is that supposed to be? And what about that guy? Like, what's he doing? Whereas the runes, it'll be like, there is ice in your house. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, I mean it's the same thing that I like about lifting weights, right? It's like there's a 45-pound plate is always going to be a 45-pound plate. There's no illusion to it, and there is something beautiful about that, like extreme a terse clarity that I think is really it makes them much easier to read and to interpret, but also like actionable.
yeah, actionable for sure. And dude, the fact that, like, okay, like, we're just gonna jump into bind runes because it's just hard for me to talk about it without talking about that. Like, So if runes are the source code of reality and they're endlessly, like they're like Legos, like you can put them together in any way, what does that say about our reality?
Cool shit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you already know that like one of my other main interests and profession and stuff is like red team penetration testing or hacking, basically, right? So the whole idea of fucking around with code and breaking things and making things do things that they're not supposed to, and then applying that to, okay, well, if you know runes are like the source code of reality, okay, well, let's hack reality. You're
Hell
literally
yeah.
splicing in code, putting in shit that you want to do, blocking stuff that you don't want to have happen. It's kind of like the whole same thing. Like I love it. That's how I usually kind of view rune magic in a way. Anyways, it's like you're either creating a bind rune or you're carving something into an object. And the whole point of now that it's there and now that that symbol exists and now that you've put the energy into it or however, you know, you go about doing, you know, your way of activating, that thing is there now. So now reality has to kind of reshape to make that work. So like that's how you're hacking it.
Yeah, it's really good magic. Like there's and I don't remember where I read this, 'cause you know, it's like you read so much, but like there's a casting, like a launch method that's like an older one, you know, I think, but like you erase the rune, like you draw the bind rune on something and then you rub it off. And it reminds me of like the old school sigil thing of like you forget the sigil, right? Like you put it on there and then you kind of forget about it. And like, you know, that isn't completely necessary. Like there's a lot of stuff I look at over and over again, but that idea of like it's like it sinks into the thing. Like it's fading into it instead of like, well, I'm not forgetting it. I'm just like experiencing life, like that's just the truth now. Like I'm not gonna have to think about it because I don't think about like the gravity that's pulling me down. I don't think about a lot about like air. You know what I mean? Like, but because I'm in it. Does that make sense? So, like I'm like putting myself into it. And anyway, sit with sigils. I have a hard time nowadays not just making bind runes out of them. Like that's pretty much what I do.
Yeah, well, I think particularly with sort of old school sigil magic, you know, we have so much wrapped up in letters in the alphabet. You know, you have all these letters that you're trying to remove and then put together, and you're like, my squiggles look too much like the letters anyway. So by using bind runes, you're able to kind of circumvent that and already move into that bigger symbolic language. And jump over the like, but does this look a little bit too much like an R? And you're dissolving the R into Raivo or something, and bringing in that again, that sort of the language of the universe. I think that that's a there's something interesting there. So how are you like squishing those two things together, Tim?
So what I do is, and it's pretty simple. It's not like I could probably get like a little more, I could probably get a little more like, I don't know, accurate is the right word, but like I'm just actually taking the letter that it looked like, 'cause you know, some sounds don't correlate and some letters don't exactly correlate to the rune, but I'm doing my best to just like change whatever letter in the sigil to that rune.
Interesting.
And then I make a bind rune out of it. And if it's like, you know, sometimes if it has certain ones, I'm like, ah, do I want to do that one? Like if it's like Hagal or like Issa, but like Dave and I had this conversation before, like Issa's in everything. So like, what are you gonna do? Like you're
I absolutely hate the rune bullshit where everybody's like, when you make a bind rune, you got to make sure that there's not a hidden rune that can mess up your meaning. Okay, well, 21 out of the 24 runes have Issa in it, so then you're fucked anyways if you're going to use bind runes for magic, if
Yeah.
that's what you're going off of. So that's a load of shit.
Like
Sorry.
we're going off intention. So like yeah, it's gonna have them in there sometimes. I don't worry too much about it. You know, I go by intuition, right? Like, does that need to be here? Because like sometimes I don't know, like, okay, we could talk about the tarot thing. Like, there's like the new age like idea of like, oh, but the tower's like a good because it's like a new beginning or something. It's like, fucking dude, it's awful.
Yeah.
So like, is there a time when hail is good?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's actually one of my favorite runes because a lot of people think like, okay, like road opener, they think of like Rhino or something, right? Well, if you're already in a shitty situation, Hoggle or Hoggle Eyes is actually better because it means that shit sucks right now. But it's like, you look at the poem, across the different meanings, and it's like, okay, yeah, sleet and hail and everything sucks, right? But that ends, and after hail, now the crops are watered and the ground is fertile and things can actually breakthrough. So it's kind of a transitionary rune for me. So like I don't usually always view it as negative. To me, it's the, things are still going to suck for a little bit, but it's a promise that it is going to improve soon.
Yeah, I like
Yeah.
that, dude. And it's like, it's cool if it's like, you don't, if it's on the bastard's car that you don't like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if the tower is the ziggurat, then fuck yeah, bro. Like bring it down. Like, unless it's my ziggurat, we can keep that one.
Yeah, real quick
Yeah, I
while
also.
I remember too, what one of the things you were talking about, you're talking about buying, like drawing the rune and carving it and then like scrubbing it out. A fun, interesting thing you can do is if you're actually carving into wood to save those shavings and then put them in a thing of mead and drink it during your blot or whatever, because now you're also like ingesting the power of that bind rune. Another one that I do is sometimes if you have like the markers with edible ink, is I'll draw the bind rune on like a paper towel. And then sink that into a bowl of water, and the paper towel will literally like float off and it'll end up coloring the water. And now you've got like water colored for whatever, if you do like color magic or anything too, that you can then use for like blessing objects or for like adding into other things or for using in other spell work as well.
That's good stuff. I have some dust that I carved, see, and now I'm having the thing where I can't remember it all the time. Algaes into some jasper, dragons, what is it? Dragon's blood, jasper? Is that a thing? Okay, cool. And then
Yeah.
I say, I like that stone was like a ward, and then I have the dust from it that I haven't done anything with yet with, but I'm like, it seems juicy. What were you about to say, Lindsay?
Oh, I was thinking I like to do a similar technique like that of writing a rune in blood and then dissolving it in water and using that for various use cases depending on the rune.
Hell yeah.
And I have a, I have a regular blood access thanks to the magic of Burkana, so
Hell yeah.
always
There,
useful.
there's also an interesting, of course, I think we should talk about the blood connection with runes, the traditional blooding of runes, which also like, it took Odin's blood for him to get there, right? Like he had to like give something. So what do you think about yeah, let's talk more about that.
Yeah, I mean it's in his story. I mean it's part of, when they talk about like, do you know how to carve them? Do you know how to blood them? So like I always think of it as, the best energy that we have is like our life force, right? So like it doesn't matter whether you're into like Qigong or Reiki or chakras or whatever, like most of your energy, I look at blood as the best source. So anytime I do bind runes or runic magic or anything, like I always get a little lancet or something out and, bloody whatever I'm making. When I got my rune set and, there was just, I filled all the inside with a red ink, but I took over a period of days going by like planetary hours and certain things that I want to do for each rune. I bled into that ink first and mix it all up before I, finished painting them in and everything. So, I mean, it's traditional and it just makes sense to me. So, and I've always had more success than when doing it than not doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a way to cement the pact with that greater language of the universe and say that you're not fucking around.
Yeah, there's
I'm pro
always.
blood in all
Oh,
in
dude.
basically all things magic.
Me too. I will just go ahead and say that. Like, people are like, don't do blood magic to start out. And I'm like, that's the fucking first thing I did, bro. It was the first thing that made sense. It was
Just keep it consensual. Just do consensual blood magic. All you
yeah,
gotta do.
right. And you know, it's like, oh, but things will get too hot. Things will get too spicy. It's like, well, these motherfuckers are already spicy, dude. Like, we ain't talking about. I don't think. Yeah, okay. There's an interesting idea, right? Like, you know, yeah, blood can make something hotter, but it can also appease, right? And I think, I don't know, it's just like, I don't know where I'm going with that, but it seems like a weird sort of inversion of like of just a normal natural thing. Like, oh.
Yeah. Well, you know, the fear is that you give a little taste of blood and wants more blood. So it's you just gotta know who you're giving blood to.
Yeah.
Have an understanding. Which is a general good practice for whatever entities you're working with, is don't just start doing shit without
Well, just, I mean, okay, so this is 101 for anyone that doesn't, you know, doesn't know, and that's okay if you don't. Just pay back. Like, honor your pacts, honor your oaths, and pay back what you owe, and you're good. Don't promise anything that you're not willing to give, for one thing. Right? And that's. So the oath is also very important in this cosmology, right? Like,
yeah, I mean
Yes.
it's all, yeah, and it's all combined too. Like it's you know your oath is keeping your word, and that's kind of how the whole like heathen moral structure works. Even if you're not, you know, talking outside of magic anyways, it's an oath-bound society. But too, like, you know, we're like you're talking about when you're blooding the runes, you know, that's when you're doing your bind rune, when you're talking to the gods, when you're doing whatever you're doing, you know, you're asking them for help, or you're telling them what you're going to do and you want assistance on. And what you're going to do for them, because it's a reciprocal, you know, even the magic is reciprocal, the whole gift for a gift thing that they talk about, and you know, with Gebo and all that type of thing. But the blood, I always love you as kind of like this is you, like you were saying earlier, like you're putting like your skin in the game, or like you showing that by bleeding out, even if it's just a little drop, going onto the rune, that I'm actually putting like some stake behind this oath. Like it's not just words, like it's also words, and it's the thing that connects me to life, you know?
And it's made of ancestors. So,
Right.
like, there's that angle too. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the gift, because the gift giving is an important part of this whole cosmology as well, right? Like, there's a lot of stuff in the Havamal about like being stingy with your gifts is being, is like, is cowardice, and it's not like engaging with life.
Right.
And that's the kind of thing that it's interesting, right? Because it's a totally different moral code than like you hear most of the time, right? Where it's like you have to do right and wrong. It's like, no, just don't do half measured bullshit. Like, and then we'll figure out the rest. Of course, there's also, you know, I think, like an honor. Okay, so like people talk about, like, well, how could like something like anarchy work, right? Like, how could that work? Because you'd have to trust all these people, and it's like, well, we have, and I'm not trying to be like, say it was ever better or anything, but like we are not good right now at the metaphysics of the oath and honor. Like, so like they understood, the ancients understood, and people understand now, it's just less of us, that it matters what we do when no one is watching. Like there is an energetic, like you give away your own power when you break an oath or when you say you're going to do something and you don't do it. And like we say, well, you know, since we have such a poor metaphysics nowadays, it's very materialist. We're like, well, it actually doesn't have any effect on anything material. So why does it matter if I fudge here? No one's looking. So what if I do it here? Or it's just a white lie, you know? Like, but that is the kind of stuff that makes you able to trust your neighbor. And like, you know, people locking their doors and living in gated communities when it's like you live in a really safe fucking area. It's just like, I don't know. It just pokes
Yeah,
me.
it's bad metaphysics, certainly.
Bad metaphysics, the root of a lot of evils. But that's
Yeah.
Kali Yuga for you, baby. What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
And so you're, you know, back to the magic part of it, right? Like I think I kind of mentioned it, but like it's also like when you honor your word, you honor words. And so like the more you keep, I think, you know, that the more I keep in line with that, in alignment with that, the more power my words have. Because it's like, okay, if I believe that my words can change reality, yet I don't keep my word, then I'm out of alignment.
Yeah.
And it's going to decrease my effect. It's going to decrease my power. And we could talk about it from just totally a morally gray zone. It's going to decrease my effectiveness in the world without even getting into like, is it right or wrong? You know what I mean? It's just a matter of cause and effect. It's like a spiritual law. Does that track? Or does
Yeah,
spiritual
I think
law make
so.
anyone
Yeah.
uncomfortable?
Right, and it's also really funny how many different little parts of the Havamal too talk about how like it's better to say too little than too much, or it's better to
Yes.
observe and keep your thoughts and only speak when important. You know, so if you're observing more than you're talking, and you're only talking when it's important, then your words are also going to have more meaning and more emphasis, and you're also thought about them longer, so they have more meaning to you as well as to the people that hear them.
There's an economy.
Yeah, a power in authenticity for sure, which has been an interesting thinking about the runes that come up for me now. It's all about maintaining that, and that is the path back to power for me after some years of disempowerment. Like, no lies under any circumstances.
Yeah, because it hurts me to lie. Like,
Yeah.
and like that's like, oh, that is that selfish? Like, no, dude, like they're like it's the proper relationship is what it is, right? Like I'm right where I'm supposed to be, and that keeps our relationship where it's supposed to be, you know, like, and of course it also hurts you for me to lie. But the reason that that does that is because we are all hurt when one of us doesn't, like, this might sound really intense, but like when any of us aren't in the stream, it kind of pulls all of us out a little bit. Does that make sense? Like we are fucking connected. We are. Right. So, but I mean the only way, like I can't force someone to be somewhere. I can only be my authentic self and just hope that that rubs off. But you know, I think we can see what's like in the world now that like, you know, I don't, it's hard to find the words for it. Like I try to go to a Jungian thing, right, where it's like Individuation, like maybe I don't. Individuation's like, eh. What is it? Orlog? Anyway, I might be on a tangent there. Don't let me take us away from the
You on
runes.
a tangent? Never. Well, I when we were initially talking about this, I had mentioned the technique I used to like first immerse myself in the runes, that was really effective for me. And since this is, not really a it's going to be a 101 plus episode, but it might be useful to anyone who's interested in developing a relationship to the runes. This is something that worked well for me, and I've recommended to other people is to take go through an order and put one under your pillow every night and sleep with a rune under your pillow and dream of it. And not everything is going to necessarily be the feel relevant. But I've gone through that process a few times and developed a different sort of understanding of the runes, again on that like greater than the either the symbolic meaning of them or that the sort of like new agey like, well, we know that Urus means strength, and so it's good for these things. Like it kind of gives you some that dream logic, the almost sort of surrealist view of understanding something, and it's like greater the greater field. And I think that's a really interesting way to interact with them as not just as symbols, but as like entities in their own right with their own stories to tell. And it's fun, like especially combining it if if you want to like read the morning after what the meaning of a particular rune is, but if you're just sitting with it even without that predetermined notion, I think that's a cool technique for anyone who is interested in deepening their relationship with the runes. So I thought I'd share that sweet tech.
Yeah, Dave, I want to hear your take on that because I know you've got cool dream stuff going on.
Yeah, so I actually really like that, and what it also reminds me of is like I do a lot of like lucid dreaming, dream yoga tech type stuff, like Tibetan style. And one of the main techniques from the person I learned from for dream incubation was there's different letters and symbols in Tibetan that you are supposed to like, you go to sleep, and then when you wake up in the middle of the night, around like midnight, one, two, depending on when you went to bed, when you're in that phase where like you roll over, you're kind of awake, but you're going to go back to sleep real quick, you're supposed to visualize one of those different Tibetan letters while also, as much as you can, like in your own mind, like hearing what it would sound like if you were to intone it and like feel that vibration and fall asleep staring at that symbol, hearing that sound, feeling that frequency in your body. So I think doing that exact same thing with a rune would be super killer, I would bet.
I really
Yeah,
like that idea.
that's really good.
Yeah, that it makes me think, that idea of that second sleep, that sort of is wherein we are at our most in tune with the divine. It would be really cool to use that intentionally to attune with the runes. I'm
Yeah,
gonna do that.
do that for sure. I want to do it too, but I don't wake up. Maybe I'll set an alarm.
Can I recommend getting an elderly dog that whines a
Yeah,
lot?
there you go. Has to go out and pee. Yeah, and I was gonna say too, like, I think that that's really just good advice in general for dream stuff to like, okay, like, because I just did the rune for each night that you were talking about. I just did that. And I've done this same thing before with like, with other stuff, with like PGM Dream Tech. If I'm looking for a dream oracle, I'll set the intention before I go to sleep. This dream is going to answer this question, or this dream is going to be about this rune, or this dream, you know what I mean? I've been doing it lately with now a spread of runes. Like, what are my dreams going to tell me tonight? Three runes. And then I sleep with those runes. And does it relate? Usually not. But the intention was that my dream is going to be about this. So the act of explaining the dream that may not seem connected from the point of view that my intention is correct, like that did come true, then, oh, I can see where that would be. And then the cool thing there is that I just closed the loop. I made my intention true by fitting my dream into it. And then I'm like reinforcing that muscle. It's good shit.
Yeah, I like that, and that's how a lot of times those things work for me anyways too, is you always kind of, especially when you were beginning, would get that like initial sense of disappointment when you woke up and you're like, oh, I don't really even remember what I dreamt about last night, so I guess it didn't work. But it's the sometimes a week, even a few weeks later, you'll end up reading something or you'll see something online, and then you'll be like, oh shit, I dreamed about that. Oh, and then it starts connecting back, and it's like this chain reaction going back in time, like you said, closing
Nice.
the loop.
I'd like to get to that point where I can do that. If I don't remember it that day, I'm done for. But it will come back during the day. So I think, I'm getting there.
We're all getting there.
We're all getting there. How about runic journeys? Y'all have experience with those? I have some cool stuff.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever really like intentionally sat down to do like journey style stuff, 'cause I think I've talked to you before about too. Like I practically have like what's it called? Anaphantasia or aphantasia?
Aphantasia.
Yeah, I have no mind's eye whatsoever. It's like somebody says, think of an apple. I think of a gray blob that has like all the coded attributes of an apple, but not anything actually there. But one of the ways that I worked with runes, especially in the beginning, and I still do it every once in a while now, is I'll actually get out any type of like counting thing, like a mala, like I said, a mala beads or something like that, and I'll actually just over and over and over like intone that rune while visualizing it. And that's probably the clearest times I ever have actually gotten like journey like experiences of this rune literally like opening up and just like getting little glimpses of things here and there. So that's probably about as close as I've gotten to journey work, but that's just because I'm not very good at that. It's weird. I can lucid dream more often than not, and they're crazy and vivid and vibrant, but during the waking hours, like no mind's eye whatsoever.
I just think we have different gifts because I can never lucid dream. Like I can't even get my dreams to be about something. Like I've done so much magic for this. And it's just like, oh, I had a truck driving dream again, But like I can picture anything. Like I have the opposite problem, basically. So it's interesting, right? What about you, Lindsay?
I have never done runic journeying. I'm between y'all in terms of my mind's eye and visualization, but have not actually intentionally journeyed on any of the runes. I have always defaulted to putting them into dreams, sleeping dream rather than wakeful dreams. So I'd love to hear about some of your runic journeying.
Yeah, so like I don't I've definitely not done all of them, but I would used to do like a random draw using like a shuffled playlist of like Wardruna songs. You know how they have like ones that are like for each rune. They have a
Yeah.
song. And I would do cardio. And then I like said that with like a small sense of like amount of disdain. I would do cardio, fucking cardio, and then I would journey on it. And it would always go, like you get to that kind of runner's high moment and it would just like take off. Now I'd ask Odin to take me and stuff. It's good to have the allies for this and but yeah, so like one of them I did, actually Lindsay, you helped me with this one because it was at I had done it a little bit before we met for the first time at Wizard Camp, and I went into Hagal, and I was like, it was like an like a snowy ice realm, but I went down into a valley, and there was a village there that all the men of the village, their heads had turned into birds. And the women were like, could you help us? We need your help to like turn these guys back into dudes. And what you need to do is this. And they showed me like a ritual to do, basically. And but I needed some specific stuff. So one of the things I needed was a plant that Lindsay, you actually helped me find and get. And then later on, I was able to do the ritual. And it was cool. And so like that's like a really good example of like, okay, so that started out as a rune journey, but it became like a year-long like quest. You know, like it took me a whole year to actually do it. And that's another thing too, like, you know, there's not a time limit. Like, unless they you're given a time limit, there can be a time limit. I'm not often given a time limit, so it's like keep your word, but like you don't if you get disheartened by the idea that it might take a long time, I wouldn't worry about it because I don't think spirit time is the same. So like, yeah, sometimes it'll take me a while to do something, but I do it. And it's usually the right time. So that was one. I've just had really cool ones where like one really beautiful one I remember was Uru's, and I was like on a fucking, you know, like is it a mesa? Like what is Devil's Peak? You know, like the things that like people think used to be trees. You know that theory? Like anything that looks like something is that like that's actually a giant's foot. That, you know, is a tree. Well, it's like I don't want to go off on a tangent about symbolism because it's like it doesn't have to be true to be true. Like anyway, but yeah, so I was on top of like a cool Uru-shaped mesa looking down at like these huge herds of aurochs moving below. That was a really cool one. Yeah, I like them a lot. I think it's a really good way to learn them if anyone's interested in getting into it. And again, it's one of those things where it's like very unstructured. Just let it show you. Just let the rune show you. I always imagine a doorway shaped like the rune, and then I go into it.
Like that would be an interesting technique to use when you're in a situation like what I'm seeing right now, where I'm having the same handful of runes show up in every single reading I do. It's just like, we're gonna bludgeon you with this message. So it's probably the runes telling me to spend a little more time sitting with them in maybe a journey space. So
Yeah.
I may give that a shot with some of these that are showing up a lot.
Yeah, do that and then do the waking up one too. I think would be a good one also.
Yeah. It's being like, yo, I hear you. It's like when you're out driving and there's six cars with one headlight in a row and you're like, I can take a little bit of subtlety. You don't need to bludgeon me with this.
There's not a lot of subtlety.
Nice. He's not subtle, is he? Bless him.
But you know it's interesting because he is very cunning, but like it's like
Yeah.
not shy.
No.
Which is honestly, you know, one of the things that I grokked, you know, the other day in the car was that when you see the rune master, which you know, the rune master, you also see the runes. Like when you see Odin, you are looking at the runes because Odin is, I'm getting goosebumps all over my body as I say this, because Odin is like they came to us through him. So therefore, to see him is to see the encoded information of the runes. So, like, what you're talking about, like having that sync of seeing ravens, or having that sync of a wolf, or having that sync of the car, or whatever it is. So for the longest time, I was having those, and I was like, but I don't understand the runes. Like, it does, like, but the runes were coming to me because I was seeing the rune master. So, like, it's like that when you get an angel communication and it's like this image that holds all this information, it's kind of like that, right? That was one of the understandings I received was like, oh shit. So like since he glimpsed the runes, so when we glimpse him, we glimpse the runes. So I saw kind of my experience, my first experience with Odin as my you know, he grasps the runes and then he falls back from the abyss. Like, we reach out and touch it, and then we come back. And when I come back from the abyss, I'm here. Like, it's like, oh, I gotta fucking get groceries now. You know, like, what do I do with that?
Yeah, no, it was kind of the same way for me with Odin too, because like I told you, kind of like what more of that retro causality is that, a big part of what got me started down the Norse stuff and working with Odin ended up coming from my car accident, where like nobody can understand how I did not die in that thing. And like even like the CHP officers on scene were like, oh yeah, the driver of that car, he died. And I'm like, as I'm standing there, and then years later have a vision with Yoden, or Odin going through that car accident in slow motion, and it was kind of like, you're supposed to die right now, but I can make you come back, and that's how you'll get magic, but this is your sacrifice. So it's kind of that whole same thing of, the story of, Odin going to the grave and reaching down into hell to pull something up to do his divination and talk to things, and then going back, or him, getting on Sleipnir and going on the way down when he does like his magic sometimes. It's like there's definitely this weird connection between like going to the extreme to the point of death and then coming back that Odin's really fond of, obviously.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's it does make, I've been in an interesting state of had kind of put my relationship with him on pause because I was worried that I was basically going to run myself into no longer being on this plane a little too soon. And so it's been interesting to renegotiate those boundaries and move back into that and say, like, I will give you this. I can keep our pact, but like, we need to make sure that the lines are drawn. Like, turns out you making spirit pacts when you're like in your early 20s and like super self-destructive is maybe a bad idea, but those can always be renegotiated. And that's the, the wisdom of the ancestors in saying like, everybody wants this to persist. Like, you don't want me to burn out. So, yeah,
That's
he's a
also, go ahead,
interesting
sorry.
one. I was just saying he's always just endlessly interesting in how you can relate and understand on all those different levels.
The wisdom of seeing far can look like, it can look evil. There's a name for Odin that's evil doer. But I think it's one of those situations of like, dude, I'm gonna fucking use a Harry Potter reference, man. You know when like Dumbledore and Snape like come up with that plan and then like he has to do it, like that's like having to do something that hard for the good of, because you know what's going to happen if not, like that is true sacrifice. So like for Odin to, here's a good example because it's an example from my life. You know, when I first encountered Odin, I was like deep into hard drug addiction. And when I encountered Odin, it was not like, if it was not immediately like, stop doing drugs, bro. It was like, oh yeah, are you really gonna fucking do this? Do it. You know, it was like, go as deep as you can into this. It was like the first, you know, I think I've mentioned on this podcast, the first piece of magic I did was to get drugs. With, or the first one that really worked, and Odin was definitely instrumental in that. And so it was not like, it wasn't this like, you shouldn't do drugs. You know what I mean? It was like, oh yeah, fucker, you're gonna do it? Do it. You know? But my understanding of that now is that the only way out is through. And the only way for me to have come through that was to work 100% my own designs until I came to the end of the road and there was nowhere else to go. There's no more runway because people that have more runway in addiction, I see this all the time because I'm active in the community. People with more runway, they fucking keep running, you know, and they'll go back out. Like, you know, you don't see them again. They just disappear. It's like, well, he had more experimentation to do. Well, sometimes in that experimentation, we die. And that's like when you talk about skin in the game, Odin is skin in the game. Like, we're gonna do this, you might die, but you also might experience the true meaning of what it is to be on this fucking realm, you know? So what are you gonna do? There isn't a, and there isn't like a safe in between place because this whole place is it's about going. So anyway, yes. It can look incredibly like almost callous, almost evil, you know? But it's like I see a great wisdom in it, and it's the reason I'm here now. Like, you know, it was like I had stuff I needed to take care of. Well, Odin was like, well, we're gonna do it right now. Like, you're gonna go serve your time and we're gonna get out and we're gonna do this thing. Like, there's no fucking time to fuck around anymore. Ragnarok is coming. Come on. You know? It's not like a I'm gonna just keep you safe. It's like a we're going.
Yeah, you can't describe the black and white, there's lots of judgment. The morality of the contemporary West to it, certainly.
I was just gonna say, I think, you know, a lot of that is that whole, you know, the frenzy aspect of Odin. You know, it doesn't always have to just necessarily be anger. It can be drunkenness, it can be whatever, but there's this sense of whatever you're gonna do, at least fucking own it and take it as far as it can go. Cause like you're saying, that's the only way you're gonna get it out of your system sometimes too. You know, like I had a lot of anger issue stuff evolved from the accident and then losing my career and then, you know, being basically like a half cripple for like a good, you know, 8 to 10 years before I started healing a little bit. And, you know, you get a lot of negative emotions around that, but it's like that's part of what I worked with Odin is I had to get fucking pissed off and be angry and get through it all so that on the other side of it, I can be like, okay, well, now stuff's better. I can get my life on track again. I can go do things. I don't have to be feeling sorry for myself. I can start getting in shape and lifting weights and doing stuff again. I can go out and do stuff with my kids. I don't have to just be like this feeling sorry, crippled guy on a couch, you know? And it kind of took being pissed off to get to that point to get over feeling sorry for myself.
Hell yeah. What are the runes? We know they're the building blocks of reality, but what are they to you? I'll go first. Another thing I saw that I understood that Freya Aswynn talks about in Leaves of Yggdrasil is that the runes are the survival of the ancestral religion, of this ancestral wisdom, of these myths. And that, you know, because I was going in through this period recently where, like, I was like mourning this lost religion of my ancestors because it's completely gone. You know, like we don't have, like, yeah, people are do reconstruction and stuff and that's fine. I'm not super into it, but they, you know, they do their thing. I'm not gonna talk down on it either, but it's completely vanished. Like even though most of the accounts we have were written by Christians, you know? So I was really mourning this. I've been doing some ancestral healing work and that was coming up in it too. But then I had this realization that, like, no, it's all there. It's all there in the runes. You don't have to have like an in like a codified religion that like tells you how to experience these things. They are, the runes have survived so that we can pull that out of it in our own time, in our own way, through our own experience of them, to have an authentic experience of them that comes from within, that comes from here, that comes from our own journey to that abyss and back. And that's the most beautiful thing to me. It really is. Leif and Leifthrasir hiding in the tree through Ragnarok and then emerging. You know, and then Baldur can come back and then, you know, we could do it again. But like, yeah. So that's what I've been seeing lately about what they are. And that's been nice because it's like, no, it's not gone, but you don't have to like go for what was either. Like you come up, what's your thing? What are you gonna do?
The collective unconscious, a sort of reservoir of ancestral memory piece, I think is very clear with them for me. And you look at sort of the, again, like a sort of more contemporary new age and look at them. It's like, oh, well, it's really just an it's an, a tool for reflection on your own psychology. And it's like, no, it's not. It is that deep language that is encoded in human history, perhaps certain ancestral strains of human history, and like that deeper consciousness, like from what we knew before we were born, and understanding those things on that deep level, you do feel like that you are dealing with the source code of the universe, which I think is really powerful. And there is that lingering understanding and that deep past that you feel with them that is impossible to ignore.
Yeah, and I also think there's an aspect of them too that like I view them almost as their own deities or their own entities. Like they have kind of like their own sense of agency and like what they want to accomplish, what they're trying to push through into reality. You know, like you know, Fehu like wants to keep on pushing and wants to keep increasing. You know, it's they're like their own little thing too. So they're not just like blank code for building blocks. They're almost like their whole own program, each and unto themselves, where,
Yeah, that's good.
yeah.
Yeah, that's what I think that's one of the interesting things about working with them in Dreams and Journeys is starting to understand that each rune does have a consciousness of its own and and an agency.
And you know, this may be informed from my runic journeys, but each one is a place. They're a whole realm. Like, you know, I think nine is just a good word for saying a lot. Like nine realms, you know, like more than that. You know. Maybe there's sometimes also silence, you know? I wanted to think if there was anything else I wanted to talk about. We've got a little bit more time.
Do you want to talk about the ones we drew before the
Oh, yeah. Let's do that. So we each drew a rune from our own personal runes before we started this recording. And I don't know, you know, is it a reading? Is it just three runes to kind of deep dive on? Is it like
I think a little deep dive into exploring them, and I think particularly getting everyone's relationship with different runes, if you have one, you know, maybe.
yeah, so Dave drew the rune that he works with the most, which is
I
great.
drew the one that shows up for me in every reading right now.
And I drew one that to me represents Ragnarok and is also something I've been thinking about too, like a whole bunch, but won't say too much about. Who wants to go first? Or I can.
I mean, I think if we go in, we can go in order, so then it would be Hegel first.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I can go. Yeah, so like I said, I kind of touched on a little bit earlier when I was just going off on a tangent about, hoggle, however you want to say it. Generally people think of this as like one of the most negative, or like even sometimes the most negative rune, but it never really was that way for me. It's always been a transitionary rune where, like, yeah, things suck right now. It's hail. It's everything stopped. You're getting pelted. You're getting cold. You can't do shit. Like, it's just a complete interruption to your life. But, most of the other poems, especially when you talk about it, also have this whole other aspect of it, where, oh, it's also the sickness of serpents. Well, nobody wants a bunch of poisonous snakes running around your house, so it can help also get rid of bad things. Or, the which one is it? The Anglo-Saxon one talks about like the grain, coming back up afterwards. So it's also a promise that things are going to get better. To where, so in a sense, it's kind of almost an extension of Ysa, because Ysa's like everything's frozen, but Hagalaz is more like everything's frozen right now, but there is a guaranteed change coming as well. And then I guess if we're going to talk about personal relationship and stuff with it too, it's the rune that I associate with hell. And part of probably one of the bigger parts of my Norse practice is actually like a Norse centered, Norse flavored necromancy. So I do a lot of work with hell and Draugr and other things like that. So it's kind of just has that personal little bit of a meaning to me as well. But yeah, it's funny how it comes up for me a lot, like it just did today. It's just one of those things that just like that's like my repeating rune through life. But the other personal attachment that I have to it is it's kind of the rune that I also associate with my accident. It put my life completely on hold. It fucked everything up for me. But they're just like how I ended up getting better, and I ended up kind of getting what I wanted more out of life because of having had that happen. It's that same thing where there is a promise towards the end.
Do you have the rune poem on hand?
Yeah,
I was
I
going to
got
say, while
all
you were
three.
talking, I was like, we should read them.
Yeah, so for Hoggle, the Old Norse rune poem, hail is the coldest of grain. Christ created the world of old. So obviously these things get Christianized at some point too, but the Icelandic rune poem, cold grain and shower of sleet, the sickness of serpents. And then the Anglo-Saxon rune poem, hail is the whitest of grain. It is whirled from the vault of heaven. It is tossed about by gust of winds, and then it melts into water.
Yeah, that I like that, and then it melts into water. I'm pulling up.
Yeah, it does have that. It's a great rune for the Kali Yuga, right? It's the inherent need for things to be sometimes destroyed to create a more fertile ground.
Yeah, sometimes you need to fuck shit up. That's how I think about it.
So quotable.
It's
Very true.
like and it's interesting, right? Because it's also like I think there's also an aspect of it that's like tell me if this tracks at all. Like water is good. We need it to live. But in certain forms, maybe in certain quantities, it can also be destructive. So it's like kind of It almost urges like a balance and a perspective, maybe. Does that hit for anybody?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. It's like you're saying, the whole balance aspect of it is kind of like what always keys back to me as well too, just because especially we're talking about the Norse way of life, you know, it's almost everything, especially like in the Havamal, when they're talking about different aspects, whether it's wealth, whether it's war, whether it's speaking, it's always about this balance of moderation of anything that's good can be bad, and anything that's bad in the right circumstance can be good, or in the right quantity can be good. So it's kind of that there's this inherency that nothing is necessarily good or evil or bad or whatever. It's how it's applied and how it's currently in your life.
Yeah, skillful versus unskillful, as we all know, I'm interested in. I think I only have the angle. Who was next, by the way? I don't remember the order
I
of
think
this.
that'd be well, if we're going in, it would be me, I think, because you
Okay.
got Tagaz. And I think it's interesting thinking about, I always see Hegal as sort of part of a that grouping with Issa and Nalthius is all those kind of pivotal, the parts of the second eight that are sort of the negative ones. And they're all kind of aspects of the same process of destruction and stopping and needing and moving, and then they segue into Jera, which is what I pulled, which I think having those sort of wintry and complex and fraught runes then move into the rune of the yearly harvest. It is part of the story, right? That you need that in order to have the crops. You need to have sometimes things need to freeze over, and we need to have these continual cycles. And it's not seeing them. Need is not bad. Necessity breeds growth and stopping and starting, and the inherent sort of destruction and growth that comes from hail. So I got Jira of or the year. And as I mentioned, it's been coming up for me a ton lately. I think there's a personal component to that. I've been kind of going through a very clear year of transformation and kind of moving into another piece of that, and this the harvest of difficulty is really meaningful. I think it's an interesting one because it's so many of them feel very, I mean, none of the runes are static. They all have like an energetic mean to them, but Jera in particular has like a visual motion to it. It is rotational because it is the wheel of the year. You see the harvest. I pulled up the rune poems for it. So it's, you know, harvest the boon to men and good summer and thriving crops. Summer's a joy to men when God, the holy king of heaven, suffers the earth to bring forth shining fruits for rich and poor alike. Like it is the fruit at the end of the needful and perhaps difficult times. And it's one of my favorite runes to see, because it has that movement to it, but it's a patient movement. It's a slow moving rune of like sometimes you've got to wait a year for things to come to fruition, and that's part of what you are what you're doing when you are working with the runes is bringing things out to that sort of bigger, broader time scale.
It's interesting too because you have to wait for everything to thaw before you can sail the ships. But maybe it's just because I listen to a lot of Amon Amarth and they just sing about waiting for the ice to freeze so they can sail. Just like good shit.
Yeah, relatable.
But it's like it comes back to that ice. I like that a lot. Which is okay. So now I'm seeing a really interesting progression and connection with the runes that we drew. And this is why rune readings are so cool because they will have this, like, once you really look at them, they have this beautiful sort of internal consistency. And I guess, you could say that for a lot of divinatory systems. Maybe it's just my preferred flavor, Yeah, what do you think about Jira, Dave?
Yeah, it's like we were saying about like cycles, but one of the things that like a personal association that I have with it is also is a lot of times when it comes up for me, that's like depending on where it comes up in the reading, it either means for me that that it's gonna take a while for something to come through to not necessarily rush it, but usually depending on the other runes around it too, I also take it as a sign that like I'm actually within like the correct natural flow for where I want to be with something. Like it's because there's this whole thing with cycles about like one of the things I like about Jira too is that I don't, some people read reversals for runes, some don't. I tend to read them as like direct or like unbalanced, not like an actual reversal, but you can't reverse Jira. It's the same no matter how you flip it around. So there's not a bad part of the cycle or a good part of the cycle. It's all the cycle.
I like it. Yeah, you're in it. You're in the Like you're going the right way, just keep going. It's going to be all right, even if you don't feel it. It's
Yeah,
coming.
be patient. I think
Yeah.
there's a patience to it, but it's like it's a joyful patience.
It always makes me think of computers, like the little spinning hourglass, like the lotus.
Yeah,
Oh
it
yeah,
really is. It
dude.
really is. That's it.
Yeah. You're in the middle of it. It's coming. Things are, it's working.
Yeah.
It also makes me, I mean, of course, because of the way it's formed, it makes me think of Kinos.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the way the way that fire can make a hot air balloon fly, and the way that it can make leaves blow up into the sky, it's like the torches that keep the world moving. Like, if you want to be like, which is true, because the Earth's molten core is the re like one of the things that keeps us like good and rotating with a like a healthy magnetic field and stuff. But it's also like symbolically like the fire that keeps things moving.
Well, it's also cool how it's a cycle of two facing each other too, because what happens if you don't tend to a fire? It goes out. But with Jira, with the cycle, it's the constant refeeding of the fire to keep it going.
It's good stuff. And so that brings us to the rune I drew, which is Dagaz, which is like the breaking of day, the new day dawning, that sunlight, that to me it's just like that really illuminated clarity, but it is like it does have this sense of like, so but coming back to cycles, right? It's depending on who you ask, it's the last rune. It's one of the last runes, regardless, right? It's either that or Odala. And so it's like, the new day is the beginning of the day, but it's the end of the night. Like, it is this point of shifting. And the cool thing is the shape of it is like, it's like you took a square and twisted it. It's that lemniscate too, right? And it's this, like, things go up, they come back, things go down, they come back up, they go this way again. So that's, one of the reasons why, and for other obvious reasons, but like why it's Ragnaroky, but like it's also like the return of Balder. It's like, but that, like, for Balder to come back, the whole world has to weep. The whole world has to weep. That's the deal, right? And so you get this Hagal, you get the like the tears of the heavens, and you have to wait for all that to come to fruition through Yira, and then you get to experience Dagaz And then it starts over again. Thoughts?
Yeah, it's always been like I've always called it like the promise room. It's like it's the promise that something else is coming, or the the promise of another day, the promise of the God still being there. Like it's like the hope rune for me, I guess is how I always tend to look at it.
Yeah, good stuff. How
Yeah,
did you rate the poem? Go ahead.
I use it as it's like a spiritual antidepressant. Like focusing on Degas really helps to kind of break away that sense of everything's doomed forever. It's a good one to meditate on in dark times.
And talk about the shape of it too. You're talking about the up and down, but like it's also like Gebo being held by two people. So
Oh,
it's like
that's
the
really
promise
cool.
that the reciprocation is going to continue moving on is how another way that I've always kind of like looked at the shape of it.
That's beautiful.
It's so good. I was just like, oh, it's a pretty butterfly. But I like it being Gebo being held. That's beautiful.
just gonna glaze Freya Aswin some more, but like she's got a really cool exercise where you imagine it starting at your eye, going up, coming down to the other eye, and where they cross is at the third eye. So she also has it as like a rune of the third eye of that seeing. The poem, dude, okay, I had a hard time finding the poem. I could find the Anglo-Saxon one.
Yeah, we don't have a Old Norse or
We don't
Icelandic.
have an, okay, that's why. So it is, day is God sending, dear to men. The great Lord's light means mirth and happiness to rich and poor, useful to all. Yeah, the sun shines down on everybody. It doesn't like, you can't gatekeep it, bro. Well, I guess you could if you want. But eventually that will not work.
Simpsons episode where they build a giant shield to block out
Yes, dude.
sunlight.
Yes. Is that in Highlander 2 as well? Which is not recommended unless you just are like a big Highlander fan like me.
Gonna say that's the one that doesn't count, right?
Yeah, no one counts it. Yeah. But okay, so interesting, Ragnarok, right? Because the Fimbulwinter, the sun is blocked, it's swallowed up by the wolf or however you want to look at it, right? And then so imagine that for like, what is it, 3 years or something? I don't, what symbolic amount of time or literal, whatever. The sun isn't there. And then all of a sudden you see it peek through. Like that feeling, that moment is Dagaz. That is what it is.
Well, even talking about Ragnarok being, encased in darkness, and then eventually Balder, the Shining One, comes back. The sun comes back. It's the promise of the light returning,
Yeah. So that's cool. I'm trying to apply this reading now to what we've spoken about. It does say
I mean,
something about the runes. Go ahead.
yeah, it's a microcosm of how the runes work, right? It's a story that is universally applicable, actionable, mindful, meaningful, and like very, very concrete around understanding how it works to be a living being in this field, in this timeline. Like, and it's just right and correct and impossible to argue with in the way the runes always are.
They're good at making poems too. I always find it like I get it. Like, if I'm having trouble understanding what the reading is saying, like, which is always just more of a matter of me than what the runes are saying. But like, if I can make like I like make a sentence or a couplet or something out of it, like if I can make it into a poem, like it makes sense. And it always like sounds like something out of the Havamal. If it's good, if it's like,
that's a way that's actually good for beginners too, is you can kind of flip the order around a way. But I remember reading, this was years ago, I could try to find the source and give it to you later, but there was a book, it was just like a little quick book called like Applied Runes or Applied Runic Readings, where their whole basis for beginners was just to pull three runes, and you looked at it like basically as parts of a sentence. It's like one was the verb, one was the adjective, and one was the other. So you end up getting things like, you know, Fehu means money, but it can also just mean like investment, and Algis is protection, but it can mean like guarded. So when you get them together, it's like a guarded investment. Like you're just by doing like little wordplay like that. And even though it's really simple and, you know, a little bit superficial, like it still gets that little key point across to where now you have a sentence that you can start working with and figuring out how you can apply that to what you're, you know, looking at or what's going on right now. And then it helped me out a lot in the very beginning when I was first trying to even remember all of them, you know?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is, if you want that to come true, you can make a bind rune out of it and just kind of go a step further, you know? Like, whereas, okay, we can just like shit on the tarot some more. It's like, okay, this is how it is, but like, are y'all gonna give me something to do about it? Sometimes it does, you know, but like with the runes, it's like, dude, this is not just the reading, it is also the magic to do about it.
Yeah.
Does anyone want to say, like, let's talk about rune books real quick before we run out of time? Rune book recommendations, because there's so many. And me and Dave have talked about this a lot. You know, like I find that like it's always good to just go to a bunch because like you find different things in each one. But like, what? Tell the listeners about your favorites real quick.
I mean, my favorite, we've discussed plenty of times, Tim, and we've discussed on this podcast is Leaves of Yggdrasil by Freya Aswin, which unfortunately is out of print, but I've gotten really good at finding used copies of it and giving them to people.
It's really
It
good.
is absolutely the it has a again that sense of the collective unconscious piece of it and some real deep wisdom. There's no book that even comes close, in my opinion, for getting to the meat of the runes.
Yeah, I kind of fall into that category of almost every rune book I've read, there's little parts I love and then equal parts that I don't care for at all. So it's been really hard for me to come up with like suggestions for people. But there's actually a slightly newer book. It's an author I never heard of, but, Walter McGorry, and it's just called Call of the Runes. And what I really liked about it is, for each rune that he goes through the typical stuff that you're going to find in most rune books, where, you know, it talks about the poems and it talks about, like, you know, the kind of more new agey meaning. But then he also has a section for each rune that goes about, here's every time this rune is specifically mentioned in any one of the sagas. Here is actual historical artifacts where this rune was used in certain rune formulas. So it
This is
goes into
good.
like the history, the magical practice, the typical, you know, runic meaning type things as well. So I really liked the aspect of being able to see that, like, oh, okay, so like we're talking about, you know, like Lagus, but then here's actual historical documents and artifacts we have where, you know, them used three times in a row was used to bless a horn for a blot, and then here's the actual picture of the item and what it means. So I really liked it from that aspect. Another series of books I really like, and I'm gonna butcher the guy's name. It's Lasse Lorgesen. He's got three different, my camera's blurred, of course, but he has three sets of books. One's like Runamastari, one's Angerboda or Vitaboda, but they're more his way of doing magic with them. But he really breaks things down into, like, he takes, like what we were talking about, the you know, the poem with Odin, where it's talking about, do you know how to carve them? Do you know how to bleed them? Do you know how to? And he takes that and turns that into an entire multi-step ritual on like how you go about doing that. He really works with the Icelandic runes, but he goes through how each one of the Icelandic runes lines up almost one for one with one of the rune charms from the Havamal. And he also goes
Oh,
into,
nice.
and which is something I use a lot too. Like when I do runic magic, I actually center whatever I'm doing around the Havamal. So I'll find one of the rune charms that fits what I'm looking for best, and I'll make a bind rune with runes that fits that theme. And then as I'm carving them, I'll recite that part from the Havamal over and over and over again, and then use those runes as like a mantra to then repeat over it over and over and over. So like anything
Freya
that uses the
Aswin.
Havamal for magic, I'm happy with.
Hell yeah, Freya Aswin does that some with the in Leaves of Yggdrasil too. She goes into the Havamal rune charms. It's good. Those are cool. I'm gonna have to check those out. I would say here's mine, maybe a controversial take. I have no idea. When I was starting out, Taking Up the Runes by Diana Paxson was really nice. And one of the reasons why is because she gives like three of her favorite rune scholars interpretations in it as well. She has Edred Thorsen's in there, and I can't remember some other, and she kind of like brings them together with the poems to like give her, take on them, and it was really good. And she has cool rituals in there too, for like group stuff as well. Yeah, that was really good. Sweet. Well, I thank you guys so much for coming on and talking to me about the runes.
Been a real pleasure.
I had a
Yeah, good luck.
blast. And I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your day. We'll do it again soon. Is there any final comments y'all would like to make?
Say if folks are interested in getting to know the runes but feel intimidated, just sit with one or two and see where it goes. Like I think that there's something to be said for like everybody has a divination method that vibes with them, and maybe they won't resonate with you. Maybe, this is an us thing, but like they're not, you don't need a lot of reading or thinking about them to interact with them the first time. Just sit with the shapes and what the meanings really basically, and follow that where it goes. Don't be afraid of them just because they're, a deep language of the unconscious and reality brought to us by a glorious trickster.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say the same thing. It's if it's something that interests you at all, like feel free to start playing with them, because one of the nice thing about a rune or a bind rune is you can always scratch it off or destroy it if things aren't going out for you. And there's something that's easy enough to start working into magic you already do. If you're doing money magic, throw a Feihu into your sigil. If you're somebody that likes candle magic, just carve one or two of them into whatever candle you're working with. I mean, it's complex enough that you're never going to master them, but it's easy enough that anybody should be able to start fucking with it right away.
Yeah, and once you start fucking with it, it's gonna fuck with you.
In
And
the
in
best possible
the
way.
best way. Yeah, you're just gonna start seeing them. Like it's one of those things, like to engage with them is to step into their world, like
Yeah, you develop there's a language to them that you start to le develop a fluency to very quickly, and they start to talk back to you.
yeah. Great stuff. Well, again, thank you guys so much for coming on. I had a great time, and let's do it again soon.
Sounds great.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Have a
Awesome.
great one. Do you experience weird shit? Do your parents not like to tell their friends about what you do in the woods? Do you make more friends in a graveyard than you do at a party populated by living humans? Do you have interactions with beings that are not strictly considered human? Do other people look at you like you're crazy when you mention talking to trees in casual conversation? If you fist pumped or even just answered yes to any of these questions, you may be a nightbird. So let's sing together. If you'd like to come on the show and flap your gums with me, share your stories, or just talk about the malleable nature of reality for a while, then send me an email at tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. That's tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. I'd love to have you on the show. But until then, I gotta fly. But before I go, let me say this. Remember, you are never alone. I believe you.